Time to meet a new author today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Marie Dean has published her first book, Will More Follow? Certainly Garrison Keillor will follow with the Writer's Almanac today on Scribble. Marie, that's a very tricky title.
Oh, is it?
The Jeweler's Polish or the Jeweler's Polish? Which is it?
It's Polish,
well,
as in the
I didn't
rouge.
Know.
Yes, yes.
You start off right away with something that catches the attention. It could easily be Polish.
Yeah, it's Polish.
Polish, all right. This is your first book?
Yes, it is. I have published poetry before. In fact, I won the Mississippi Valley the poetry contest 1 year. And I've done short stories and plays, but this was my first novel.
Well, whatever prompted that? The tweet talked to you?
I'd try to get people to write poetry, which I can't do.
Well, you didn't have to goad her into that.
No.
Well, why a novel?
I was in Malta because I visit Malta almost every year, and I've been there 7 times. And I was intrigued by the culture, which is Baroque and also very much older than that, actually. And I was taken by the strength of the people who live there. It's a very ancient people. They go back to 5,000 years B.C., the Maltese people. And I just got intrigued by some of the history. And I felt like, oh, can I do this? Write something a little bit longer than a poem.
But
and I tried it.
I have to ask, why Malta?
It's a numinous place. It's wonderful. It's got history. It's charming. The people are part Semitic, part European. It's a rich history.
And that's what brought you to it in the first place?
Huh? No, I was there by accident. I had a friend who was an artist, very excellent artist from England. I lived in England for 10 years. And she had a beautiful apartment that she needed to sell, and she was too ill to go over and deal with it. And she said, would you go over and deal with the sale? And I said, sure. And I ended up staying for several months.
Huh.
So that's how it got started.
Did you, when you got interested buyers, did you tell them, well, it's not for sale?
I wish I could have. Looking back now, I think I should have bought it, but never mind.
Yeah, well, isn't it interesting how accidents
mm-hmm.
lead to big changes in life?
Yes.
You went back and back and back, mm-hmm. and then you finally decided to write a novel.
Mm-hmm.
What was the genesis of the novel? You said you're thinking of writing a story. How did a story occur to you?
Well, I was in a hotel talking to a friend of mine who was a concierge, and he mentioned that the only woman buried in St. John's Co-Cathedral, which is the huge Baroque cathedral of the Knights of Malta, was buried in the tomb of Emmanuel de Rohan, a Grand Master. Now, of course, because he was a priest, he shouldn't have had a woman buried in his tomb. So there was a mystery immediately. And so I got to thinking about her, and she's a historical person. Her name is Anne de Migny. And my third book, which will be part of this, I suppose you call it sequel and another sequel, her history, which nobody really knows about except that she was his mistress, intrigued me. And I thought, gosh, I wonder if there's other women who lived in those times who had interesting lives. Mm-hmm. And then this book just came from that. And I created another niece of de Rohan, and that's one of the main characters of the story.
Now, you have this book in your hands, and you have another one coming out?
Yes, I have another one coming out in the winter, hopefully right before Christmas, which is the sequel to this.
Oh, yeah.
And then Anne de Migny hopefully will come out the following year.
Oh, my. You got things planned out.
I've been very fortunate to meet a publisher who's willing to work with me.
And how did you do that? I mean, there are a lot of people who are trying to get novels published and not all do.
An accident of my history where I met someone actually online, and she approached me, and she knew I was writing. I had a blog for 7 years. It's still up. It's called Ethel Drayda's Place, which is a mouthful. And she liked what I was doing, and we just started talking.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the jeweler's polish.
Well, the story revolves around a mysterious bracelet, and there are two emeralds, women. One is a modern-day millennial girl from England, and she's kind of bored after her graduation, and her mom says, do something, and she decides to go back to Malta to discover her ancestor, Emerald, who she's named after, and the ladies in this family, as women frequently do, had passed down some bits and pieces about this old emerald who lived in the 18th century. Mm-hmm. And so the new emerald goes back and discovers this tale. And so the book goes back and forth between the two emeralds.
Can you read us something from the book?
Sure. This is toward the end, not quite, but it takes place in the old emerald's life. And it's in Valletta, which is the capital, a stunning Baroque city. And it's going to be the city of culture, I think, in 2018. You might want to check that date in Europe. So here's just a little tidbit from the book. Lucas is, DePinto is a nasty person. He's one of the evil people in the book. However, he does have a repentance. This is a very Catholic book, so it's about people having new lives, you know, metanoia. So let me read that. Lucas and his men planned a simple ruse. They would merge with the deacons, priests, and acolytes who would meet the nuns and then return their carts and be transported to the church down the hill. Lucas planned, with some bribery, a loose cartwheel on the cart carrying the novices. This would cause the cart to halt and be mended while the rest of the procession continued. While the wheel was fixed, the men, dressed in liturgical garb, could then surround the cart, wound the driver, get back into, and drag and gag and bind all three novices, turning the cart onto the clear side of the road leading to the Grand Harbor. Within minutes, they would stuff all three women into oversized bags on the Dove, Azzopardi's ship, with the women looking like nothing more than harmless baggage. By the time anyone noticed their absence, the women would be long gone and headed for France.
Wow.
Do you want me to continue?
No, it's, I mean, that, I don't want to give the story away, but that's, you got a lot of action in that. You know, in my notes about preparing for writers and so on, I have down a spiritual writer. Is that an apt tag for you?
Well, I think that that's partly true. I mean, it's, you know, we're body and soul, correct, mm-hmm. if we believe the scriptures. And I think that sometimes the spiritual side of life gets overlooked. And in my opinion, that's where the real action is. And so, yes, there's a tension in this book about not only the material life, love and death, rebellion, the fall of the Knights of Malta. That's all part of this book. But there's also the spiritual aspect.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that's really what pushes you to write, or are you more interested in the story?
It's interesting. I'm a character-centered writer, not a story-centered writer. Mm-hmm. And my characters carry the story along. So I fall in love with my characters, and actually they lead the way to the story. Mm-hmm. And the story unravels through the characters.
As somebody who's always kibitzing writers, Roald, is it dangerous to fall in love with a character? It is in theater, by the way. If you fall in love with a character before you start rehearsing a play, you're going to have trouble because you're too sympathetic. You can't look at that person objectively. What about writers?
I think you have to love your character. I just read an essay, and I can't remember who it was. It was in the Wall Street Journal about is it possible to like despicable characters? And I, what pops into my mind immediately is Keats' idea that the chameleon poet has as much fun creating Iago as Desdemona.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Right? I mean, aren't you in love with your...
Well, I have evil people in this book. You know, I have
you can love
robbers, of course. They're interesting people. And and they make decisions, you know, for right or wrong.
Yeah, it's a character-driven book. Is it? Does the plot just spell itself out for you?
I think so, and that's true for all my books. Like, I just have revised a few, which I'm sending to my publisher, and when I went back and I was adding details, the details are added not on the history, because the history's easy. If you know history, things just fall into place. But the problem is making the characters more believable and more interesting, and so that's where the detail has to be built up.
How much historical background do you need?
A lot.
So where did you do the research for?
Well, I'm an online person. I did use mostly online information. It's in the book. I always give my sources, obviously. For one book, which I have just finished tidying up, which I'm going to send my publisher soon, I found one ancient book online. You know how they copy those books? And I was very grateful to find that because I couldn't find anything else. Mm-hmm. So, but you don't need a lot of historical background. The Anne de Migny book, for example, takes place when France and Bonaparte take over Malta for a brief period of time before the English come in. And you don't need a lot of detail. I mean, you just need the rough mm-hmm. outline of that.
Do you start with an outline?
No, never.
Really?
No.
So does where you end up surprise you?
Sometimes, and sometimes I don't like it, but you have to be true to your character. I remember Dorothy Sayers, if you remember her Peter Whimsy novel. She was criticized by some people because in one of the books, Peter Whimsy encourages someone to commit suicide and as an honorable alternative to save his family from finding out about his crime. And she was criticized for that, and she said, but that's the character. I can't impose my morality on my character. That's the kind of person he is.
You know, that's very true. it's interesting in working with Shakespeare, as I have over the years, his characters are always true to themselves. You don't get an idea of what Shakespeare himself is like. You see these characters, wholly drawn, completely realized, and very individual.
Mm-hmm.
And they all go their own way. I think that is an amazing gift to be able to do that. Do you find yourself being bent in the wrong direction sometimes?
Well, I think that was true for some of my characters. The end of this book has a twist, which I'm not going to reveal.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't like it, but it was necessary in keeping with not only the plot, but the characters who the ancient Emerald dealt with. And I think that's true for most of my books. Sometimes something happens and I'm like, okay, I have to be true to this character, and he or she are going to make a decision that I wouldn't necessarily make in this situation.
Yeah, that's interesting to be able to create characters and then kind of let them run on their own and follow them rather than lead them.
But you must learn about them as you write too, right? Or do you know them pretty well before you even begin?
No, it's a discovery. My writing is a discovery for me as well, definitely.
You say the second book is about ready to go?
Yes, and the publisher said it would come out sometime in the winter. I'm hoping before Christmas, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's the best time.
Yes.
How does one acquire your books? Is mostly through Amazon or what?
It's on Amazon.com. It's at Hope and Life Press. And Barnes & Noble's online.
Uh-huh. Okay, so that's how you get it. And it's not the jeweler's Polish, it's Polish. And what's the name of the novel coming out?
It's called The Beast, the Prophets, and the Victory. It's about...
And does it continue some of these same characters?
Yes. But it's all in modern times. It's not set in the past.
How do you work that? When you combine the modern and the ancient, as you say you do in this first book, how do you do that?
It was sections, back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in this one. But the new one is all set in contemporary times.
Okay. Well, that's something to look forward to this winter. I want to thank you very much for spending time with us. And you've obviously off to a good start as a novelist, but for tweet's sake, don't forget the poetry.
I won't. Thank you so much for having me.
And right now, let's not forget Garrison Keillor. Support for Writer's Almanac on WBIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. Before we go to the book bag, I must say the Hope and Life publisher is very interesting. Talking to Marie after the interview, she said the publisher only publishes books that give a strong, positive view of life.
But what's amazing to me is the way the publisher called her.
Yeah.
Because he liked the blog she had been doing.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't. Haven't you had publishers calling you, Tweet?
No.
I've been calling you a few things.
Yeah, I know you have, yes. But you won't publish anything I write.
Won't publish what I call you either. But let's dig into the book bag.
Well,
what do we find there?
Before we go to the book bag, I know you have a couple of things to suggest. I want to talk about a new venture that Scribble is going to embark on.
Okay.
And that is, over the past year and a half that we've done Scribble, our contact in Berkeley, California, Nan Carter, has suggested many books, and I've passed some of those suggestions on. But her interest is in books in Arabic, books about Africa, books that take place in Pakistan, India, Sudan, Somalia, Palestine, lots of Lebanon. I'm just reading one now that takes place in Morocco. And the few of you who have asked me about it wondered where they could get those books. They are available, of course, on Amazon. They are available on Kindle. They're published by international publishers. But I just got permission from Jay, our station manager, to set up a Nan Carter free library out in the lobby of WVIK of these books that I recommend, not just the ones from Nan Carter, but others that I have recommended and would certainly be willing to lend out. So if you are interested in any of the books that you find are hard to get or you don't want to even pay for a copy on Kindle, feel free to, starting with this program, to drop over to WVIK, go into the lobby, and there will be a dozen books or so there. Feel free to take any one or two or three that you want, read them, pass them on to someone else, or return them. If you return them and feel like making a comment about them, write us a little note about what you thought about the books. But anyway, there will be a free library in WVIK courtesy of Scribble.
Let me amend that, though. It'll only be available Monday through Friday.
Yes.
Because the lobby is locked down
on
the weekend.
Right.
So anytime Monday through Friday.
Until about 7 in the evening.
Yeah. You can come in and pick up a book and then, of course, read it and bring it back.
Well, you don't even have to bring it back, but there are people who would like to read these and find them difficult to get.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some really dynamite books that Nan has suggested.
Yeah. I would suggest you bring them back so others can
read. That, but, yes, or even add some of your own.
Yeah. Oh, dear, the library will fill up. But what's in your book bag today? You have something from Nan?
I have something from Nan that it just blew me away. It's a book, this time by a Pakistani woman, Kamila Shamsi, Shamsie, called Burnt Shadows. It is beautifully written. It opens on the morning of August 9th, 1945, in Nagasaki, as a young Japanese woman says goodbye to the German Conrad Weiss, whom she's engaged to and plans to marry as he heads out for the cathedral in the center of town. And it ends, that first chapter, with the blinding flash of the bomb, which sears her back and imprints the design in her kimono into her back. It then moves ahead 2 years after she's gone through radiation treatments and treatments for her burns. Conrad, of course, is obliterated by the blast, along with 70,000 other people in Nagasaki. And she ends up going to New Delhi, India, to look up her boyfriend's sister, who is married to a colonial leader in New Delhi, just at the point at which Britain is about to get kicked out of India. So again, turmoil. She there meets a young Indian, Sajid Ashraf, who is sort of the servant of the household, and they fall in love and get married just at about the time that Pakistan is about to shift off from India over religious differences between the Muslims and the Hindus, and there's all that turmoil. So they end up in Pakistan, the new Pakistan. She and he have a son, Raza, and he comes into his teen years just as Afghanistan's are trying to throw off Russian rule, and he almost gets caught up in that. It ends in New York just after 9/7/11, where she is in an apartment. Her name, the main character, is Hiroko Tanaka. Just beautifully drawn. It is an incredible story. It's not a sad story. But does it give you a sense of the upheaval which the world is going through this day? It ends not only in New York but in Guantanamo Bay.
Oh my, that's.
And she's 70 at that time.
Dear me, that's
well worth reading. And it is sitting out in the lobby of WVIK as we speak.
Mm-hmm. You know, that reminds me of a guy. I can't remember. I think he was Australian. I'm not sure. But he saw what was coming. He saw the war, the Second World War, and Japan's fight with the United States. He knew Australia was going to be drawn into it, and he wanted to escape all that. So he bought a plantation on Guadalcanal. And the war came right. to him. It's amazing. You know, some people live lives that are marked by these great catastrophes that we hear about. And yet, as we read about those things, and we read about, you know, the big things that happen, these small catastrophes that occur in people's lives that can shape them and move you just as deeply as the big things.
Right.
Sometimes even more deeply because they are, in essence, more intimate. But to deal with history and life in fiction is a fascinating way to spend the time, I'll tell you. Now, what's the name of this book again?
Burnt Shadows, referring to the marks on her back from the searing explosion that she has her back to the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And she's far enough away so that she survives.
Well, you know, how many of these books are you sitting out there?
Well, there'll be at least a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
Carter keeps sending me about one a week, but they are all really good and really interesting, and each new one is a surprise.
Yeah, and all have been pre-read by Roll Tweet.
They've been pre-read by me.
Okay, you'll find his imprint on the page.
Yes.
Well, that does it for today. Our guest was Marie Dean and her book, The Jeweler's Polish. We'll be back next week with another author, more scribbling. Have a nice time. Till then, I'm Don Wooten with Roll. We'll see you then.